As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a community of people seeking to live our lives in the orienting center of God's love in the midst of our post-Christian world, learning to lead like Jesus, live on mission, and make disciples. In nature, gravity is the phenomenon that brings stuff together, objects as small as atoms and quarks, and as large as stars and galaxies. We believe the gravity of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ. The Gravity Leadership Podcast is curated conversations on what it looks like to practically orient our lives and our leadership in the love of Christ, the gravity that holds everything together.
This is the Gravity Leadership Podcast. We're talking about books, and it perhaps is borderline sinful. The amount we like them. I just got done emailing somebody from Baker, and they're like, hey, will you interview this person? And I read the title of the book, and I was like, I want that. I was like, sure, we'll interview them. We're not just talking about books today. We're talking about a book written by our friend Dan White Jr., who is a guest straight out of Syracuse. Dan, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks, fellas. Yeah, it's good to be here.
Ben Hartman, Ben Strickey, and I are here, and we could rattle off facts and anecdotes we know about you, Dan, but could you give us a proper introduction, who you are, what you spend your time doing?
Sure. I don't know how proper it will be, but I live in Syracuse, which is upstate New York, dead center of the state. Moved here 10 years ago to start a faith community. I've been married 20 years, have two little guys. Well, one's not so little, he's 14 and a little bit taller than me, and I've got a 2-year-old. And, I'm now, my primary vocation full-time is with the V3 movement. And, that's just helping, to coach, consult, and care for church planters, both women and men around the country. And then on the side, I like to read and write and watch the Dallas Cowboys.
Ooh, Cowboys.
Yeah, so
What's the story there? Why
are you a Cowboys
fan? It's a family thing. It should be the Giants, but my dad was a fanatical Cowboys fan, so.
Yeah, interesting. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Dan, we want to talk a little bit about your book today that you wrote recently called Love Over Fear. Tell us, the content of the book is in the title, right? Love over fear.
Sure.
It's what you're encouraging us to do. But what prompted you to write this book now?
Yeah, it's actually more than a couple years ago. A few years ago, I had this significant disruption in our local church where one Sunday a woman came up to me, a dear woman who I really, really love, and said she didn't think that she could stay at our church any longer, knowing that there were such liberal people at our church. And then she said, I don't feel like I can be myself here. Hmm. I feel like I'm being judged by being conservative, and I have to leave. You know, my response was, you're safe here. You belong here. Your voice is valued here. But she left. And 2 weeks later, fast forward to 2 weeks later, and a couple came to me with the same concern from the opposite angle. They said, Dan, I don't think we can stay in this church knowing there are such conservative people here that hold such oppressive beliefs. We don't feel like we can be ourselves here. And they left. And my response was pretty much the same. We appreciate you. I love you. Your voice is welcomed here. But it wasn't enough. And that 2 week encounter was brought just this inner turmoil. And I began to really ask the question, can conservatives and progressives share in Christian community?
No, is they can't. Is that right?
Is that what the book says?
Yeah. All right, Dan, thanks for being on the book.
My first response was nihilistic like Matt's. I don't know if it's possible.
Yeah.
You know, can we share table fellowship together? And that was the beginning of exploring what can I do as a lead shepherd? What weapons are available? And so that birthed the exploration into fear and love for me.
So let me ask you a question about fear.
Yeah.
Because, you know, love over fear. I don't know that the people that you talked about who left your church for those reasons, I don't know that they would, I mean, I don't know them, but I'm thinking about other Christians who have similar concerns, and I don't know that they would identify what they're experiencing as fear.
Really, Dr. Phil? You don't say.
No. They wouldn't say, like, oh, I have to leave here because I am afraid. Like, they couch it in different terms, right? They couch it in terms of, you know, these people have oppressive beliefs and I can't be myself and that kind of thing.
I feel persecuted.
So, right.
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't know if you have reflections on that. I just, like, I think I believe you that it's rooted in fear, but, like, people don't experience it as fear.
They're not in touch with it.
They're not in touch with the fear.
Yeah, fear, I talk about this in chapter one, is fear... I've had this experience multiple times in counseling, where I'll give you an example of this, where I was counseling this fella, and he came in because his wife was concerned about him. He was kind of snapping at the kids all the time, really irritable. So she made him come to the counseling, right? So he came in. And,
you need to sort yourself out.
How 73% of all husbands end up in counseling.
Right. And so, you know, I'm unpacking stuff with him, and he's using this language of, I ask him why he's snapping, and he's like, well, I'm just concerned that my kids might do this, and I'm really worried that this might happen here. And all this language, concern, and then he even said, I'm afraid that. And so I listened, and then at the end of that statement, those statements, I said, it sounds like you have fear. And he said, I don't have fear. I'm just afraid. And I found it
clearly
really
different.
Interesting that actually the word fear itself feels too strong to us. It seems obnoxious and exaggerated that we can't even be in tune to the language, to the flag words of concern and worry and all these words that enter into our vocabulary that really are rooted in fear. So those two couples that, you know, I mentioned in the beginning, that the one lady and the couple there, certainly if I said you're afraid, they say, you're blowing smoke at me, right? That would not have scratched their felt need.
Yeah.
But my exploration to fear is actually moves into neurology and understanding what's actually happening in our brains. To the point where if someone says they're not afraid, I say your brain is lying to you. The neurology of the amygdala, that when we feel threatened or even anxious or reactive to a belief, whether it's just ideological or belief that's embodied in an actual person in front of us, the first thing our amygdala does is feel threatened, primal fear. And there's a lot of science in this. I put just a little bit in the book just so I didn't nerd out too much, but it lights up that center of fear like cocaine. Wow. It just, it is, it's hot, it's addictive, and we don't think that it's fear, but that's what it really is. And so part of the work of understanding what's happening between the left and the right is actually coming to terms with how primal we are when we encounter things that are unfamiliar, anxiety inducing, and foreign and offensive and disgusting to us. We can come up with all kinds of labels, but it's really lighting up the amygdala, the primal fear center of our brains.
Which we need, right? Like I need
I
need to be afraid of certain things in order to survive.
If a bear is attacking you, the best thing to do is to run.
Right. Bears.
Yeah.
Got to be afraid of bears and your liberal neighbors.
I had a dream the other night. I'm just remembering this now, where I was with Whitney Houston. Y'all remember her?
Oh yeah.
But not like 2012. Really drugged up Whitney, like 1989 I Want to Dance with Somebody Whitney. And she was, you know, she was strikingly gorgeous in my dream, but she was terrifying. She was like chasing me, and I was scared of her. And it's not just bears with me, but it's
not like, just bears or liberal neighbors.
It might be Whitney Houston.
In my dreams.
Yeah.
The woman in my dreams scares me.
The Whitney Houston.
Can you help me with that, Dr. Phil?
I don't know.
No,
Dan,
so we
had some counseling background.
So we need fear, Dan.
Sure,
but,
certainly.
But we, it has. How would you describe it then? It has too much purview. It does like too much work for us.
It's like a fire in California. It just burns everything if it's allowed into spaces it shouldn't be in. And this is how fear has moved into our society, and we've actually allowed it into our politics. We've allowed it into our understanding of what it means to be a Jesus follower in the world. It's like a forest fire right now. And so fires are good, but they should be contained in appropriate places. So I think that's what Jesus is working out with disciples, is their fear of the other. This is why Jesus uses the language of "be not afraid" almost 40 times.
Isn't that the most repeated phrase from God to humans in Scripture?
364 times.
Yeah.
Do not be afraid.
Yes. Yes.
One for almost every day of the year.
Yeah. We get one day break.
One day break where you can be afraid.
That's like the purge. That's the one day that
That's a day. That's a day you wake up.
Very afraid.
Right.
With Whitney Houston chasing you.
Yeah. Bears.
Oh my goodness.
Do not be afraid. That's what Jesus is doing, right?
I mean, the disciples. We see this. There's these snippets of these stories, but one of the most funny ones is where the disciples go out to do miracles. They come back and they're like, "Someone not of us is casting out demons," and we told them to stop. That's a fear statement. That person's not of us. They're a them.
Right.
And there's an us. And they're afraid of the implications of someone else. And so Jesus obviously corrects them and says, if he's for me, he's not against me. And I don't know if the disciples even comprehend what's going on there, but that's a fear-based posture. Those disciples are living in. And so I think Jesus is unpacking this in many narrative ways and parables, and then just with the clear language of "be not afraid." But I think it climaxes for me theologically in 1 John, where there's the juxtaposition between perfect love casting out fear. And I think that's the war. I think that's the crux. That's the war in every human heart. I think that's the war in the universe. Is the standoff, the battle between love casting out fear or fear casting out love? And So, you know, if I can whittle the gospel down,
whittle that thing down.
It's between, it says earlier that God is love, right? In that same chapter, it says God is love, defines him as love, not he loves, he's loving or he does loving things. Right. It's the essence of God.
Yeah.
So if perfect love casts out fear, then fear can cast God out of our lives. And the introduction of the gospel is actually to let the perfect love of God reign over us, fill us, and be our primary lens for living in the universe. Mm. And so that's to me the explicit statement of what Jesus was actually doing in the Gospels.
Yeah. I've got a Bible juke for you, and I know you like those. But first, I want to let Hartman get in on this. Hartman, do you see this dynamic of fear playing out locally for you? And what are the polarities there that sort of define that?
Yeah, I mean, right now I do think we're in a cultural moment, at least more than I've experienced in my lifetime, of polarization and choosing sides and debating those sides. Mm. And I think that leaks into our church congregations. Mm. And so
yeah.
I actually think it's an amazing opportunity for us to model a different way. Mm-hmm. But I think in the midst of all of it, there is this fear of, do I belong here? And if I disagree with you, there's almost a sense of I don't belong.
Exactly.
And so one of the things that I think we've got to recapture is, how do we actually disagree? Like, how do we, how do we learn from people that we don't agree with? Like, we're at the point now where we can't learn from people if we disagree with them on one thing. It's become this cycle of entrenchment into our views that just takes us deeper into fear, right?
Yeah. The Pew Research Report, I think it's 2015, maybe it's 2015, I think. No, this is a Gallup report, not the Pew Research, but the Gallup report exposed that 74% of conservatives only have conservative friends. And 72% of progressives only have progressive friends.
Hmm.
And, you know, that's pretty much the same. The term they came up with is there's a siloing going on that is actually a new phenomenon right now in the West. We're separated. There's such a void between us that we actually don't talk to each other, see each other, relate with each other. Yeah. And so our pictures of each other have become more grotesque.
Caricaturized.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which serves to just kind of stoke that fear.
Yes.
So one of the things I hear you saying, Dan, is just that a starting point for this is to recognize fear for what it is and when it's operating in my life.
Yes.
Right? To be able to just notice, this is... my brain is lying to me. It's telling me that I am in danger when I'm not actually in danger. I've just heard an opinion that I don't agree with. Like, that's different than being in danger.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a... it's hard, Ben, to identify that. I give some prompts and helps in chapter one on that. But the fear center of our brain screams at us... and really the new spiritual discipline as a Jesus follower inviting people into is to not listen to that screaming and begin to discern rather than react. Because, and this is also part of the neurology, is that the amygdala actually does flood us with drugs. It floods us with... serotonin. It floods us with emotional return that's very addictive. And so that's also, I mean, that's the beauty of how we're made, is that there's a return on fear, a deep addictive emotional return on fear.
Mm.
And in the prefrontal cortex of our brain doesn't offer us that return. Mm. That's the hard truth. It doesn't offer us that return. And it actually, empathy, forgiveness, active listening, all these postures that work in the prefrontal cortex of our brain don't provide us an addictive release. And so it's really about choosing drugs over not choosing drugs in some right. sense.
Drugs are bad, okay?
Drugs yeah, are yeah. bad, kids.
Stop Jesus, kids. So Jesus
is
good.
This is why it's difficult naturally, and that's why even the concept of enemy love just feels so absolutely insane and unnatural, yeah. is because it is unnatural to our neurological yeah. makeup.
Yeah, we're having to hack yeah. our wiring.
Ooh, that's good. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah, we have to hack our wiring with the gospel. Right?
Yes.
To say like, yes. all right, I need to believe what Jesus says about this rather yes. than what my amygdala is telling me
so
about
if,
this.
So if flesh means yeah. animated by physical earthly things rather right. than something that's wrong and evil, then yes. like we can maybe even understand that the spiritual man isn't just somebody who's saved. The spirit man is actually somebody who's freed from being imprisoned by their biological, neurological impulses.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
Right? So that yeah. so that the flesh then is me responding to stimuli and reacting how my, you know, lower brain tells me to.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But then the spiritual yes. man is set free from being imprisoned by the drugs.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that I can love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, in some you could possibly say that Jesus was the first human to live fully into the prefrontal cortex.
Dude,
you know, he lived into the fullness of that yeah. image. And so I think at the fall, that's what we see in Cain and Abel is a regression into that. And so,
yeah,
well, that's the crouching. The desire is crouching at your door.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, that, you know, you could describe that with
almost like an animal, like the survival nature is crouching at your door.
I was like, well, you see, yes. your reptilian brain is going to, you know, hey, can I Bible juke you for a second? Let's just real quick. I think.
Sure.
Because I'm with you, Dan. I think that we need love over fear. And I think we can't just try to stay away from fear and get to love.
Right.
And get to love.
Yes.
Right? Yep. But how do I understand what you're saying in terms of all these commands? So God says, do not be afraid a bunch. But he also says, like, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom.
Yeah.
There's a fear that you're talking about that I think you want to distinguish from a fear that Scripture commands us to have. Can you tease that out for us?
I can. So that's what you just posed there, Matt, is a consistent kind of response I get with this, is that those commands seem to be in opposition to what we're being asked to do. I don't think my interpretation of the word fear, the actual word fear in the text that we're talking about, and some of those are, most of those are in the Old Testament. Proverbs, you know, says that. Exodus says to fear God. The verb yare, which is that word fear, can be translated into our English word fear, but I think it's better translated into revere or to respect. Our language of fear has in its definition the fear that someone could hurt you or
like
the
terror
of,
or
the threat of harm. Yes.
Threat of harm.
Yeah.
Where I think that the text is talking about respecting, revering the source of something, the source of wisdom. I like to say it like this. It's like if I'm a musician and I'm living next door to Elton John and I don't go next door to ask Elton John how to make it in music, I am not fearing him or revering. I'd be a fool to not say, hey, Elton, how do I do this? And what Elton is offering me is wisdom into how to be a good musician. What I think God is offering us is wisdom into the good life. And so the way we translate fear, I think, is a misfortunate interpretation. It's fear of harm and threat. To fear God means that God will smite us, crush us. If we don't do what he's asked, if we don't love him back, he will harm us. And we're asked to imitate Christ. I don't think that's the imitation that we're being invited into. And so...
Yeah,
I think if I could go through the Bible and change the fear of God to revere God, I think it's a better.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You're a Protestant. You can do that.
It's
just so it's kind of it's the vagaries of translation and the ways that English words have evolved in their meaning over time. Like part of the problem is like we look in our English Bibles and this word is the same in both cases, but it doesn't, it clearly doesn't mean the same thing.
Yeah.
The fear that love casts out is not the fear of the Lord. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Mm. Exactly. Yeah. I have a old mentor in my life who said, words don't have definitions. They have worlds of meaning.
Yeah.
And so for us, the definition of fear isn't just about a definition. It has a world of meaning to us. It means someone wants to hurt me. Mm-hmm. Someone doesn't like me. That's not what those texts are talking about.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dan, I'm curious, how do you flesh this out in kind of a local community where you do have people that are afraid of each other and you're trying to gather them around the table? Like, what does that look like for us to create space where love becomes the apologetic of the community?
That's good. All these additions you guys are offering me is going to go into Love Over Fear 2.0, and if I can reprint this is good. I can give a great story of how this has worked out, but I'll first give you the scheme that we use. We use the language of attack, avoid, or affection. Hmm. And attack is what, attack or avoid are really the only two options we're given in a polarized culture. Mm-hmm. So if I don't like progressives, I have either the option of attacking them with rhetoric, with as extreme exaggerated labels as I can, or if I don't like conservatives, I call them ignorant, Trump-voting, oppressive, ignorant fools. I mean, I just try to find, I try to get as harsh as I can with how I label them, and I call that attack. Or I avoid, and I just avoid, this is the siloing we were talking about earlier, right? What's going on.
Yeah.
In my work in community, and specifically in my neighborhood, those two options are borderline suffocating. People don't have an imagination for anything else other than that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that the commission to love our enemies, where Jesus says that, you know, you've heard it said, love your neighbor, hate your enemy. I say, love your enemy and pray for those who hurt you, which is, that's just crazy pills. And the reason he's talking about that is because he's talking about, I know what's a natural love for you, to love your neighbor. I'm going to give you an unnatural love that actually reigns on the just and the unjust. This is the way God's love is. It has nothing to do with affinity or deserving. And so this third way, if you want to call it that, is the way of affection. And the way of affection, using those three A's, is moving towards your enemy literally with warm hospitality, instead of, you know, like warring hostility. And affection lights up our prefrontal cortex. It is the only empathy, affection, forgiveness, kindness, by the kindness of God leads to repentance, is the only thing that actually can light that up and awaken that. So there's a woman in our neighborhood. One morning I was walking outside, eight in the morning. This is a couple of years ago, walking to work. And I looked across the street and a brother had hung a Confederate flag off his porch. Hmm. That's really odd to see in the Northeast. We don't see that stuff too often.
Right, right.
It floored me. You know, I'm shocked. And for a moment I thought, I'm just going to keep moving on. I think the Spirit said to me, what about Shauna? And Shauna lives right across the street. Shauna is a black woman, single mom. And I started to realize, see, she's going to walk outside this morning and be greeted by that brutal imagery. So I knocked on her door. She opens the door, you know, groggy, bedhead still, with a cup of coffee. And she's like, well, what's going on? What's up, Dan? And I said, well, don't look across the street, which made her look across the street.
Right. Yeah. That's the first rule of getting people to do things.
Yeah.
Tell them not to.
She sees that flag. Yeah. And I say, what do you want to do, Shauna? We go to her dining room table, and she is traumatized. She's shaking. She has a little boy, Grayson, and she starts saying, I can't not walk to my car every day and Grayson see that flag. You know, she just, does not know what to do. So I'm like, Shauna, I will do whatever you think you want to do. I'll support you. I'll back you up. I'll walk over there with you. She said, no, give me some time. So I said, okay. So she's a church going lady. She went to church, went to small group that Wednesday, and she told her small group the story. It's a black church. And I'm just trying to give you the context here. Sure. And half the group said, we're going to rip it down tonight. We're going to go over there and rip it down.
Wow.
They chose attack.
Mm-hmm.
Another part of the group is like, Shauna, just forget about it. It'll go away.
Mm.
Yeah.
He'll probably take it down in a few months. She walked away from that small group. Something deeper than her, I think it's a spirit. She felt neither of these options are going to bring transformation.
Yeah.
Neither of these options are good options. And so she reached out to me and she said, Dan, I'm actually going to go over there and talk to him.
Mm.
And she's like, but I don't know what I'm going to say. I'm going to go over and talk to him. So she baked blueberry pie. She walked over, knocked on his door. He did not answer. She left it on his porch and left a note and said, Charlie, I just want to talk about your flag. I'm your friend. Can we talk? And 2 weeks go by. He ignores her, doesn't respond. I mean, she's living in anxiety for 2 weeks now.
The flag's still up this whole time.
It's still up.
Yep.
Still up. Okay. Every day I'm like, Shauna, are you sure? Is this what you want to do? She's outside walking Grayson one afternoon. He pulls into his driveway and like paparazzi, she converges on him. Goes right to his window and knocks on his window. And he tries to ignore her still. He gets out of the car, walking up to his porch. She's right next to him. And she just keeps saying, Charlie, I just want to talk. I'm not your enemy. I just want to talk. Eventually, they get to the door and he says, fine, we can talk tonight. Come on over. So, you know, she gets home. She calls me up, panicked. What the hell am I supposed to do? I'm not ready for this. I'm like, I'll go there with you. She's like, no, I need to do this. I'm only going to be in there 2 hours. If I don't come out in 2 hours, come and get me. So she goes in and she walks into his house that night and she sees all the symbols of life, his grandkids, his family, his war paraphernalia from the Iraq war. Mm-hmm. She sees his recliner solo there that he sits in. They sit down. She realizes this is a broken, broken, lonely, lonely man. His wife bailed on him years ago. He's living with tons of regret around how he bailed on his kids. Mm-hmm. And all he does all day long is sit, read the newspaper, watch news at the loudest volume he can. And she begins to see him as human, and he begins to see her as human. And fast forward the story, they become kind of friends. Where he agrees, he says to her, damn it, Shauna, I don't know why you need this, but I'll take the damn flag down. That's what he says. Takes the flag down, which isn't even the victory yet. And he says, one day he's shoveling, you know, winter comes to winter, they're shoveling outside, he shovels her driveway. She comes out, thanks him, and he says, hey, listen, if you ever want me to watch your kid, babysit, I can do that for you.
Hmm.
Something's beginning to happen here, and she takes him up on the offer like a month later. Grayson's napping. She goes over and says, hey, could you just watch him? I got to go to the grocery store. And she does. Now, she doesn't know why she's taking him up on this offer. There's a lot of uncertainty about it.
Mm-hmm.
She gets home 45 minutes later, comes into the house, says, hey, thank you so much, relieves him, but he won't leave. He's lingering at the table. He sits down. He says, can we talk about what happened, you know, months ago about my flag? She said, sure. He said, you know what? I've been thinking about it. I don't fully understand, but I'm starting to realize I've not ever had a black friend like you. And I'm really sorry. And I think I might have some racism that I have to work through. Now, not every story works out like that.
Right.
But I do believe it is an untried path, the way of affection. Her affection towards him allowed him to consider a truth that he would not have been open to.
Mm-hmm.
They call this in neurology backfiring. Is that when you pummel people with facts that are foreign to them or call their identity into question, they don't just necessarily deflect. They actually double down.
Yep.
Yeah.
Happened to me last night on Facebook.
It's not accomplishing anything. Right. Yeah.
Let that be a lesson to you, Matt.
Right.
It literally did.
It feels powerful. It feels like we're accomplishing something, but there's, I mean, I think there's enough data now and enough sociological history where we're getting further away from each other and we're there's not transformation taking place. So when people say, "And are you against telling people the truth?" I'm like, no. But is it work? Is that cold? Is that pummeling someone with cold, hard facts working? That's the question I'm asking.
Right.
It's not.
Yeah.
It makes us feel good, though.
There's a place for truth.
We get those drugs.
There's a place for flipping tables. Yeah. But right now, the void between us is so wide that we have to train Jesus followers into the way of affection. I like to call it affectionate action. It's the only thing that actually can awaken us to, I think, the good news. So
that's what's
anyhow. That's the long version.
That's a great story, man.
It's a highlight of our podcasting in the last year so far for me. That story.
That's a great story.
Go ahead, Hartman. What did you notice about that story? What do you want to draw attention to? That you think, we could talk about this story for 20 minutes, but what grabbed you? What struck you about that?
Yeah, I think, one is that we just don't have an imagination for love. I think that's a big part of what we're training in at Gravity is we lack imagination for how do we love well. And we're so entrenched in our polarized options, right? So in the three option, it's curious that she went for advice and the options, she was given the two options, right? Attack or avoid. And so I do think there is a third way that we've got to learn how to embody. And then we also have to have a discerning community around us where there's others that are discerning with us, because my impulse oftentimes is attack or avoid. And so when I am living it in community, I think we start to recognize that there is a third way, and we have that imagination stirred up because we're living in community together versus when we're isolated and entrenched.
Yes.
I think that creates all kinds of deeper issues that we don't comprehend. So I think a lot of our fear, a lot of our entrenchment is also because of our individualization of our culture. And so because we're such an individual culture, we've isolated ourselves into these corners where we lack imagination because we're not with people.
Strunky, what did you notice?
The thing I noticed is, Dan, you describe affection not as a feeling I have towards somebody, but as an action I can take towards somebody. Shauna isn't necessarily feeling warm fuzzies towards Charlie when she goes across the street to meet with him for a couple hours. She may actually be feeling fear.
Of course.
You know what I mean? Like, she's like, come get me if I'm gone for, you know what I mean? Like, those are, she probably feels fear, but what you're calling us into when you say affection is not feeling differently towards people, but doing differently towards them.
That's good.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think I stole this term from somebody, I don't know who, but there's an act as if that's occurring. I feel fear, but I'm acting beyond that initial emotion towards with affection. So that's what Shauna did. Instinctively, she knew that she could not just go with what she felt.
You're acting as if the gospel's true.
Yeah.
In other words.
Well,
bro, that's great. Yeah.
And this could be why we don't, Harbin, to pick up on your comment, we have an anemic or small imagination for love. This could be one of the reasons why. Love isn't learned by getting a Master's of Divinity.
Yeah.
Or by reading a bunch of books. Or by listening to a bunch of Def Leppard love songs. Like, love is...
Definitely not the Def Leppard ones.
Definitely. But love is learned through embodied participation.
Yes.
Like, in view of the mercy of God, offering your body as a living sacrifice in the arena of dealing with your fear, anger, and hatred of Charlie.
Right.
Right. And then, and then you will... Then your mind is renewed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you'll know how to discern God's will.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And that kind of learning, like what I took away from that story is, I know why we don't have an imagination for love. Because we're chicken shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really hard. Like, love is really hard. Yeah. It's the hardest option that Shauna had in that moment was to love him.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
And
yeah.
And nothing short of dying to yourself.
Yeah.
Will get you there.
I work out a little bit in, I mean, I would love to write a whole book on this, but in chapter 4, which is called Affection for Monsters, I'm working off of the medieval concept of monsters, you know, distorted humans. And I used to have a fascination with them. I collected books on medieval monsters. But
yeah.
Dude, you truly are a nerd, right? Your capital N.
That's like awesome.
I revere your nerdiness.
It's amazing.
That's amazing.
No, I love it.
Your collection.
What's your favorite? What's your favorite medieval monster? The succubus?
Nope. It's the what would it be?
sorry to put you on this.
No, it's okay. Well, I mean, I put a few in there. The
hippogriff?
Nope. No. It's the...
That's Harry Potter.
No. Yeah, my brain is drawing a blank here, which is probably not good for a podcast.
No, it makes for great podcast. Yeah.
The winged creature.
Oh. All right. Look it up.
Yeah, we'll do this.
Consult your library.
We'll put it in the show notes.
The Pegasus?
Yeah.
The winged horse? The Pegasus? No, that's the,
nope,
that's
nope.
Greek.
Oh,
that's not
no,
a medieval
no,
monster.
The Paniti. It's the Paniti, which is P-A-N-I-T-I-I.
I love paninis.
It's a creature with huge ears.
Melted cheese.
Charmin.
That's my
I'm so hungry,
monster.
Dude. It's lunchtime. huge ears, yeah. Huh? Okay, anyway, so in your chapter...
We're going to let that go there.
Sorry. Affection for monsters.
Affection for monsters.
Anyhow. In that chapter, I mean, I've been working through what kenosis is. And,
oh, yeah.
And Matt, you triggered this with your talk about dying to self. And I think the kenotic, that word of love in Philippians chapter 2 of kenosis, empty, is less just about... pouring out something that's in, but it's also about pouring out to make space for something that's not there. And so this is, I think that Jesus' love being kenotic, self-emptying, is actually holding space, making space for the other that is foreign, that is offensive, that is repelling. Because when you're full of yourself rather than emptied of yourself, there is no room for anything other than what you like, what you have affinity with others that are like you. Mm. And I think that this is what we see in the Trinity, that God in Christ emptied himself to make space for us.
Yes.
And that kenotic love was already pre-world. Father, Son, and Spirit already lived in kenotic love.
Yes.
And they brought that here to make space for, well, this is why Paul says, that God loved his enemies, to make space for us who were opposed to him.
Yes.
And were offended by God's love. He makes space for those who are actually offended by him. And so kenosis is really that act. It's probably the only muscle that can create space that allowed Sean to create space for Charlie.
Dude. So what you're saying is...
Because there's no space in Shauna's world for him, and there's no space in Charlie's world for Shauna.
Right. So if you're spiritually bored, if you feel like your relationship with God is dead, that you can't hear him, he doesn't answer your prayers, you don't even want to pray, you haven't picked up your John MacArthur study Bible in years, turn off the Jeremy Camp song, turn off this podcast, and go empty yourself and participate in the life of the Trinity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So
yes.
I'm struck too by the thing that brings revival is us giving ourselves over to the life of the Trinity.
Yeah.
And the people to teach us that aren't the people we want to call teachers.
Right.
Right? So Shauna, you know, you worked with Shauna and like she trusted you, but like...
Oh, I didn't lead her.
Oh, it's so clear, Dan.
I watched her.
That you benefited so much from Shauna.
Yeah.
Being close to her, right?
Yeah.
Being approximate to her. And like I need people. I need a Shauna in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I think our role. I mean, just not to stop your flow, Matt. But
stop it.
I become Shauna's advocate. certainly.
Yes.
As she's moving into and modeling and breaking open space for Kenosis, I'm her advocate. I mean, I think in some ways she needed me to say, I will do whatever you need.
Yeah.
I'll go wherever you need to go. Mm-hmm. I will be here for you. I can be your voice. If you need me to be your voice, if you need me to go next door, I can.
Mm-hmm.
But she wanted to exercise that muscle herself. And so my role is advocate, in solidarity with that.
Dude, that's so helpful. And I think we need more resources like this that give us a new imagination for how to navigate these kinds of things. This is foreign to us. We just got through this series where we talked about power issues. Like, we're so used to engaging from a place where we're in power and we want to control things. That I think we just need more and more people like you helping us see a new way of being in the world. It's really helpful, man.
Thanks, dude.
The book is Love Over Fear.
Over Fear, What to Do When Whitney Houston is
Chasing You in Your Dreams.
Chasing You in Your Dreams.
I think that's the subtitle. Was that was a rejected subtitle, but yeah.
Yeah, that didn't get through.
Missed opportunity.
Dan, how else can people contact you?
Or connect with you.
Connect with you online and that kind of thing.
Yeah, there's a fun website that we launched called loveoverfearproject.com.
Okay.
And it's built like a movement in some sense. There's a free 20-page Healing Our Polarized ebook on there for small groups and discipleship groups. It's like the streamlined version of this to take a group through. This is fun. We had some artists make original music based on Love Over Fear.
Oh, that's fun.
For any of you DC Talk fans, Kevin Max wrote a really beautiful, simple Beatlesque song called Be Love. There's a lot of resources to kind of get at the imagination around this. So loveoverfearproject.com is the best place to go.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. Love Over Fear Project. Pick up the book. We'll put links to all this stuff in the show notes, folks. Dan, thank you so much for sharing this time with us.
Yep.
Telling us stories and helping us see some new stuff.
And thanks for the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a joy. Thank you.
It's important work.
Yep.
Keep it up.
Right. Thanks, right. Friends.
Bless you.
All right. Peace, y'all.
Amen.
See you next time.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you enjoy learning from this podcast, please be sure to show your support by rating, reviewing, and subscribing on iTunes. Be sure to share with your friends on social media too. And we would love to hear from you, so please email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. You can join our online community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.